The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Listening once again to Audio of Interest, coming to you on the Flypod.com New Media Network. I am your host, Gary Puckett, and thank you for listening in. My guest today is Cameron Shandersky. He is a knowledgeable insurance professional, having received the Chartered Property Casualty Underwriter designation. Educationally, he holds a bachelor's degree and an MBA from Xavier University and is currently a doctoral candidate in leadership studies, also at Xavier. Listeners, our topic for today's show is cryptocurrency. We will attempt to learn more about this elusive currency, which has emerged on the scene in recent years. I don't know what to think of it. The details of cryptocurrency can be somewhat difficult to get your head around, frankly, and certainly it's something that is just not part of the traditional paradigm when we think about currencies in general, here in the United States and around the world. He will be joining us momentarily. Our media network operates with a dedicated team of 35 individual show hosts. And a great group they are. We have 80 syndication partners and 17 media domain platforms. Our studios provide targeted on-demand media programming for over 3,300 small communities around the nation. Audio of Interest is a show format we offer across all 50 states, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. On this show, we attempt to bring you conversations pertaining to unique and interesting topics. Hopefully today we'll live up to that goal. So Cameron, I welcome you once again to Audio of Interest.
Hello.
Great to speak with you again. You sure know how to pick out interesting topics for exploration. You know, we talked about the autonomous vehicles, and here we are today discussing cryptocurrencies. I'd like to begin by asking you what I think is a basic question. What is cryptocurrency, and how long has it been around?
Well, cryptocurrencies are basically digital money, digital cash. In response to the financial meltdown in 2008, the first cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, was released by a developer by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. And it's believed that that is a pseudonym for probably a group of people rather than actual individual. It's kind of secret. Nobody knows who this person is. But many people who've dug into some of the writings about the beginning of Bitcoin have ascertained that it was probably a group of folks. The use of cryptography allows two untrusting people to transact without an intermediary. Disintermediation is the key of all of this. Taking out the middleman, be it a bank or an escrow account or a government agency, acting as that trusted third party, so two untrusting parties can transact. What this is doing is making the system that intermediary instead of a corporation or a government entity.
Well, this may sound like a silly question, since you said that it is an electronic-based transaction, but would I be correct in saying that you cannot see or touch any denomination or amount of cryptocurrency? It's purely an electronic record of sorts. I mean, is that a fair description?
Think of it this way. The underlying architecture is called distributed ledger technology, or DLT. The common term people have heard is called blockchain. But blockchain is the DLT for Bitcoin. There are other coins out there that have their own distributed ledger that the term blockchain doesn't really apply. It's kind of like using the term Kleenex for tissue. The blockchain is actually specific to one coin, Bitcoin. So all of the coins for a particular, let's use Bitcoin as an example. All the Bitcoin are kept on this blockchain. And the app on your phone or on your computer is your, quote, wallet, is actually control of those coins, not the coin itself. The coin itself never leaves the blockchain. The blockchain always has a fixed amount. It simply Cameron is sending control of 0.023 Bitcoin to Gary in Gary's wallet. So it's the transfer of control of those coins, not the coins themselves. So there's always a fixed amount on any distributed ledger that control is shared and given and taken based on transactions.
Yeah, that's very clear. I mean, actually, to understand that there is a total amount, and that total amount really doesn't change. It's just distributed.
Correct. And it's decentralized throughout the world. It's run over the internet. And in Bitcoin's example, back in 2010, 11, when it was, the code was released to the world, people could run Bitcoin or the Bitcoin network on their laptops. And what they found was the faster and more powerful your computer, the more the transactions you could support. And the system was designed to award you for supporting the network with newly minted Bitcoin. It's called mining. And the technology was very interesting, but what we found over the 10 years is that it's a bit slow. And now the Bitcoin network is using more electricity than the country of Denmark. So it's not necessarily environmentally in the long term the best solution. So there have been other methodologies besides mining that have come out more recently that don't require 10,000 computers throughout the world and their aggregate use of electricity being not good for the environment.
Just explain the process a little bit. How does one actually obtain ownership of cryptocurrency, and are there any risks of owning or trading in these currencies?
Certainly. The main risk, just like any foreign exchange, is volatility risk. With all of these coins, there are coin tickers out there. The trading function is no different than 15 years ago when you were working with pounds, pesos, and dollars. Now you're simply working with all of those plus Bitcoins and Ethereum and Ripple and Dogecoin. So it's the same practice. It's simply more currencies available. Other risks include your exchange getting hacked because it is all electronic. Ethereum has had its fair share of issues of not necessarily the underlying architecture being hacked, but apps built on top of it by third parties tend to have their risks and basically emptied of their coins, so to speak. So there is certainly risk, and the fact that it's connected throughout the world means a lot more opportunity for the bad guys because, you know, 100 years ago, you pretty much had to hold up the bank in person. Well, now you can sit in China or Brazil or whatever and try and get someone's account that lives in Ohio.
Wow. What got you interested in this this whole tech-based currency movement, if you will?
Honestly, I'm a very curious person, and when I'm curious about something, I go to YouTube, and I came across it, watched a little few-minute video, and I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And the nice thing is YouTube does work for you. Once you find something you're interested in, it's going to start giving you more. It's almost like a drug dealer. you like that? Here's the more. So I just got into it, learned more. The Satoshi white paper is only 9 pages long in regular English. It's not highly technical. And once I read the white paper, I realized, wow, this has a lot of potential. And that's what the crypto, just reading the history of it, the crypto community said the same thing. There had been earlier attempts at digital currencies, but they all had an Achilles heel called the double spend problem. If you think about it, I'll boil it down to just normal use of a computer. If something's on your computer, you right-click, copy, paste, and now you have two of them. Well, they could do that with if your coin was a digital code as well. So the problem, that double spend problem, was I could spend it with company A and get my slice of pizza, but since I copy and pasted it before I transacted, I could spend it with company B to get my soda. So that double spend problem was the Achilles heel of all the early attempts at digital currency. Well, what Satoshi Nakamoto, this group, came up with was the blockchain is a history of every transaction ever done since day one. That first block is called the Genesis block, the very first set of transactions. So now today, Gary, if you wanted to start and get a Bitcoin wallet, or if you want to start mining Bitcoin, you would actually download the entire blockchain all the way back to October of 2008. And every time you want to do a transaction, the system looks through all those hundreds of thousands of transactions to see if this coin's been spent already. And if it has, if you tried to spend it a second time, It says, nope, you already spent it here for your pizza. You're not going to spend it a second time here for your soda. And that's how they got around, or they were able to stop the double spend problem. And that truly is the innovation that's changing the world, because it's more than just transfer of digital dollars. Anything of value that is transferred from one party to another can be recorded on a blockchain. And remember the term disintermediation. You don't need the county title agency to sell a car because this transaction is housed on the blockchain. Real estate deeds, you don't need the county recorder because, again, that transaction is on the blockchain. So this technology has the ability to get rid of a lot of middlemen that make money off friction. Bills of lading, the international transfer of goods is really going to benefit from blockchain technology simply from its efficiencies. And it's immutable. Basically, you have thousands of people looking at the same ledger, distributed ledger. So everyone is saying, yes, this transaction is legitimate. If you try to do something dishonest, everyone else is going to say, no, your copy has data that's different than the rest of ours. Your copy is void. So that's where this distribution of information is going to help not only in efficiency, but in keeping things honest as well.
Yeah. The Satoshi white paper, is that readily available to anyone? And if so, would you recommend our listeners reading that?
Absolutely. It gives a very good overview of the Bitcoin idea back in 2008. And you can Google it. It's a small PDF, like I said, 9 pages of not too technical speak. I come from an insurance background. I'm not a computer programmer, especially not a cryptographer. And I found it to be very interesting and enlightening. Very simple concept of this blockchain or distributed ledger is.
As with any accepted currency, it has to be backed by something. In the case of the U.S. dollar, I assume it's just the faith in our government, whereas they used to be gold, but no longer. What supports cryptocurrency?
Confidence. And that's no different than our dollar. Anyone that has direct deposit from their employer and then uses a debit card to go purchase something is already used to digital currency. Say your employer didn't hand you a stack of $100 bills every 2 weeks when you get paid. We're all used to digital technology. It's simply not the dollar. But any currency today that's not a commodity base, most are fiat currencies, are simply based in confidence, and cryptocurrencies are no different. Now, it is much easier to spook the crypto community. Bad news on from a governmental regulation standpoint, the SEC has been turning down Bitcoin ETFs lately, and almost every time they make an announcement, you can see the movement in the price. So it is more volatile simply because the users are able to react so much more quickly than, say, the dollar that you'll see move with a Fed decision. It's all based on confidence, be it a fiat currency or a cryptocurrency. No different.
When people talk about mining, you brought that up earlier a little bit, associated with cryptocurrency. Is that a nefarious thing going on, or what is going on there when mining is taking place?
It's actually the action that supports the Bitcoin network. Now, let me be clear, not all cryptos use mining. Two of the top three do. Basically, it's your contribution of computing power to the network. And the Bitcoin network has more computing power than the top 50 supercomputers in the world in the aggregate, although it's tens of thousands of people providing small bits of computing power. In the whole, it's a very strong network. Mining is not a nefarious thing at all. It basically, if you are going to contribute your computer processing power to this network, your computer is actually processing a mathematical problem to get into a lottery system to be, I want to be the computer that closes this block. Every 10 minutes, a new block on the Bitcoin blockchain is created, and hence the term blockchain. Once that block is closed, it can never be changed, and that's that part of that security issue. You can go back in time and see all these transactions. So really, the only block that is potentially vulnerable is the one that's still open for 10 minutes.
Well, do banks and financial institutions around the world, do they recognize and accept cryptocurrencies? I mean, where do things stand at that level?
It's interesting with banking and insurance, you're very solid, entrenched industries that are slow to turn. It's like a big battleships, very slow to turn. But they've been forced to recognize the power and efficiency of this new technology to where, yes, they are coming along. 3 years ago, you got to remember, it started out very anarchical because, you know, the 2008 financial implosion, a lot of people suffered from it. And then the government bailed out the banks. So there was a lot of animosity towards the banks. And I think the timing of the release of the Bitcoin network was not accidental. So 5 years ago, I would have said banks aren't interested. Today, they're saying we can't ignore this or it's going to be to our peril. Because with that disintermediation, these coins are able to allow people to transact without us. So we better become a part of it. The three things I talk about when people say, well, what's the best crypto and things like that? There's three things that I think you need to evaluate. The use case, first and foremost, what is it created to do? The technology, is it safe? Can it handle large amounts of transactions? Meaning, is it scalable? And three, who's the management team? Are they quality individuals that have a good track record of not only producing, but honesty? But what I'm particularly into is called Ripple. And what they are doing, their use case is cross-border transfers of value. When these large international banks have to send value from one country to another, they have to convert it to the other country's currency. So what happens is, let's use JP Morgan Chase as an example. They have to hold large amounts of foreign currencies in what are called Nostro and Vostro accounts to counterbalance value being sent abroad or received from abroad. You have to have large amounts of these other currencies sitting dormant. Well, that's the last thing a bank ever wants to do is let their money sit dormant. They want to make money via interest rates or whatever. So what Ripple wants to do with their coin called XRP is to be that intermediary currency or a bridge currency where now JP Morgan Chase only has to have one Nostro account of XRP rather than dozens with all these different countries' currencies. So if the Royal Bank of Scotland does the same thing, now the Royal Bank of Scotland only has to transfer from pounds to XRP. JP Morgan only has to transfer from dollars to XRP. So that bridge, that intermediary currency, allows for things to change very quickly. If you've ever wired money, you may have heard of the SWIFT network. Been around since 1973, and that's the current methodology of wiring money throughout the world. And it takes 3 to 5 business days, and you lose about 8 to 10% in friction, basically in fees, to get it there. Well, remember, 3 to 5 days and 8% loss, where with XRP and the Ripple's technology, it costs 1/100th of a penny, regardless of the amount, and it happens in about 3 seconds.
Wow.
So you can, there's an example. This is a couple of years ago. Canadian bank sends $1,000 to a German bank via Ripple. It was done in less than 4 seconds at the cost of 1/100th of an American penny, fully reconciled. It left in Canadian dollars and it arrived in euros 4 seconds later.
You know, the effects, the ripple effects of this currency technology, the more you brainstorm it, it goes pretty deep because, as you were saying, you can eliminate, especially with this Ripple technology, you can apply it to other things other than just currency, is what I hear you saying, and kind of eliminate all these intermediaries.
You're absolutely right. One of my favorite stories, one of the early Bitcoin stories, is an Amazonian tribe 400 miles away from the nearest bricks and mortar bank. All they needed was a single cell tower in their village, and now they had a modern economy because they were able to pay each other via their phones in Bitcoin at the time. Okay, you help me roof my house. Here's some Bitcoin. You had an extra large catch of fish. Let me buy some. So they went from a barter system to a modern financial system with the addition of a single cell tower in their village. The unbanked throughout the world, the third world, is really going to benefit the most from this technology because they have so far to come. We are spoiled with our modern financial system that works good enough. You know, it may take a day or two to transfer money via paper check, but it's pretty efficient and reliable. The third world that are unbanked are going to leapfrog to a modern economy simply through their cell phones.
You use the word spoiled in referring to our system, but I almost would say ingrained, because change is difficult, especially when you start to rock the boat and all of a sudden a lot of these systems that exist and these institutions that exist no longer would be needed.
That's very true. And if you think about the large corporations, especially banks, who have millions of dollars invested in a certain hardware, you know, in their current servers and methodologies, they have to squeeze every ounce of profitability out. That's their corporate responsibility as a, you know, publicly traded corporation. So to take on something new that does involve a lot of risk, they're very slow and cautious, and rightfully so. As a shareholder, you would want that. But the smaller privately held entrepreneurial companies, that they can take advantage of that, of their slow reaction time of the banks.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you think about this into the future, and you know, presumably the individuals involved, just through death and attrition, you know, you're going to have more tech savvy, more tech comfortable individuals in decision making positions. I could see where the adoption of these cryptocurrencies could become much more commonplace. What do you think?
It's going to be a ubiquitous technology. We're just going to be so used to it. Let me give you an example that's not too extreme that blows people's minds is your refrigerator. You give your refrigerator a budget. The refrigerator knows how often you consume milk and butter. It notifies the local grocer that we need a delivery of this. It also calls the Uber autonomous car to go pick it up and bring it home to you. And the refrigerator is the one that paid everyone. It's not that far away.
Oh, that is so wild.
With the car is going to be driving itself to the mechanic and paying the mechanic to fix it so it can get back on the road, making you more revenue by driving others. All you're going to do is set the parameters. The machines are going to be doing the work.
Yeah, this is so crazy. Well, Cameron, another interesting conversation with you. And I hope you come up with some others through your own curiosity, because these are fun. But this cryptocurrency phenomenon is so far out there, I think, for most people. But I would recommend that our listeners get their hands on the Satoshi white paper and read it. It's only 9 pages long. I mean, you want to educate yourself. You want to be knowledgeable in a more accurate way. This is the way to do it. I'm sure it would be quite interesting. But the technology obviously exists. But I do believe it all comes down to a level of adoption, acceptance, and faith in the system, a confidence in the system by the people. Cameron, I have enjoyed our conversation and hope that our audience members have as well. Thank you for joining me once again here on Audio of Interest.
Thank you, Gary.
Listeners, may I suggest that you share this show with your friends? All you have to do is copy and post the link to this show directly on your social media pages or platforms. We sincerely thank our network underwriters for their support and for making this show possible. If you find that you have a specific question or comment about the program, you can communicate with us directly in Studio Number 7. Shoot us an old-fashioned email anytime, 24/7. shout@theflypod.com. Well, I have been your host, Gary Puckett, and you've been listening to Audio of Interest. So until our next episode, we thank you for joining us and listening in today here on the flypod.com New Media Network.